Stories of Journey to the West, Chapter 17.
For a story that's, you know, centuries old, Journey to the West still feels incredibly alive, wouldn't you say? It's just this foundational epic, this amazing adventure.
Absolutely. Gods, demons, incredible journeys. It's got it all.
Today, we're diving deep into one specific, really action-packed part. A classic Sun Wukong situation, actually.
The Monkey King himself always gets interesting when he's involved.
Definitely. This one involves a stolen treasure, a precious cassock, and, well, Sun Wukong doing what he does best, trying to get it back with, let's say, enthusiasm.
Right. The excerpts we're looking at focus exactly on the theft of the Jiasha, the cassock. And Sun Wukong's characteristic approach, very determined, maybe a bit rash.
That's putting it mildly sometimes. But yeah, we see the initial confrontation, lots of posturing, and then things take a bit of a turn. It needs more than just Wukong's staff, it seems.
Exactly. It escalates.
Okay, so let's quickly introduce the main players here. We've got Sun Wukong, the great sage equaling heaven. The title alone tells you a lot, right?
Huge power, huge ego sometimes too. Then there's Tang Sun Zhang, the monk he's protecting. Our main antagonist here is the Black Wind Demon.
Yeah, see? He sounds pretty formidable. And crucially, we also have the Bodhisattva Guanyin lead you. Very powerful, very compassionate.
And the setup is important. It all kicks off after a fire at this monastery where the cassock was being shown off, maybe a little unwisely.
Uh-oh. So it goes missing in the chaos.
Precisely. And the monks are understandably terrified of what Tang Sunzang will say. So Sun Wukong, ever the loyal, if headstrong disciple, volunteers, I'll get it back.
Driven by duty. Yeah. And maybe a little bit of watch this, I imagine.
Probably a fair bit of that, yes. His pride is definitely involved.
All right, so Sun Wukong heads off, his first move. He gets to Black Wind Mountain, no. And the description is, wow, really beautiful.
It really is. The text describes, you know, Edsi, thousands of streams rushing, cliffs competing in beauty.
Birds singing, flowers smelling sweet even after they've fallen.
Yeah.
Rain making the green cliffs shine. It's incredibly vivid. Wild grass, flowers, sheer cliffs.
Mm-hmm.
It paints this picture of perfect spring beauty.
Even mentions cranes drinking by the stream, monkeys playing on rocks. So there's sashi, towering peaks like stacked shells.
It's gorgeous. But it creates this fantastic contrast, doesn't it? This idyllic scene and underneath it all, demonic activity.
Yeah, that juxtaposition is classic. Beauty hiding danger. Appearances can be deceiving, right?
Definitely a theme here. And it doesn't take long for Wukong to find trouble, or rather, overhear it.
He's not exactly subtle, but he does manage to eavesdrop this time. He hears three demons chatting.
That's right. The Black Wind Demon himself is there, along with a Taoist figure and a scholar type dressed in white.
And what are they discussing? Only planning a party. A Buddha's robe assembly. Can you believe the nerve? A party centered around the stolen sacred robe for the Black Wind Demon's birthday, no less.
Talk about disrespectful. And they're mentioning alchemy, too. Okay, Sayo's book. Setting up cauldrons, refining mercury.
Yeah, yeah. Sounds like they're dabbling in some unorthodox, maybe power-seeking practices. Very different from Tang Sun Zhang's path.
It really highlights the demon's arrogance, doesn't it? Using a holy object like that.
Completely. It cements him as the villain, and Wukong hears all this.
And reacts exactly how you'd expect. Boom. Instant rage. He just jumps out, golden hoop rod at the ready.
No hesitation. Probably shouting something like, "You thieves! What's this about a Buddha robe assembly? Give back my master's cassock."
Very direct. Very Wukong.
And very impulsive. Violence first, questions later. He actually manages to kill the white-clothed scholar.
Who turns out to be?
A white snake demon. Xinya. No big surprise there, really.
But the main target gets away.
Yep. The Black Wind Demon ducks back into his cave. The Black Wind Cave. And the Taoist. Poof! Escapes on a cloud.
So one demon down, but the cassock is still gone. Not exactly a total victory.
Brute force didn't quite cut it this time. It scattered them, but didn't solve the main problem.
Okay, so Wukong doesn't give up. He follows the Black Wind Demon straight to the cave entrance.
And he's not knocking politely. He's yelling, demanding the cassock back, threatening to smash the whole place, demons and all.
You can just picture it. The peaceful mountain suddenly filled with the sound of an enraged Monkey King.
Total ultimatum. No negotiation. And this forces the Black Wind Demon to show himself.
And he looks the part, right? The description is pretty intense.
Oh, yeah. Hail, gleaming iron helmet. Oh, Bright, dark gold armor, piercing eyes like lightning. His Yinchko.
Black robe, black spear with tassels. CGL I am, an Osho one. Boots, the works. Definitely looks like a demon king.
Yeah, he's impressive. But Wukong, of course, has to make a joke.
He does. What does he say?
Compares him to someone working in a soot-filled kiln. Just can't resist being cheeky, even facing down a powerful demon. Sun Wukong, he doesn't exactly ease into the conversation.
No kidding. He just yells, basically, enough talk. Give your old granddaddy his robe back. Something like that.
That's the gist. Very demanding. Very Wukong.
He calls himself the monster's old granddaddy. That's bold.
It is. Setting a tone immediately. And the monster, well, he's not having it.
Right. He pushes back. Like, who are you? What temple? Where did you lose a robe? Why are you demanding it from me?
Exactly. How hung go away the food be by?
Exactly.
That denial, that skepticism, it's right there.
So Wukong explains. He says, look, it was safe at the Guanyin Monastery in the abbot's room.
And then the accusation, he says the monster took advantage of a fire there.
Yeah, like exploiting the chaos to steal it.
And he even knows why, or thinks he knows. To hold a triatai, a birthday party celebrating with the stolen robe.
Which is pretty audacious in itself.
Completely. Wukong's basically saying, I know what you did, don't you dare deny it. And then come the threats. Big ones.
Oh, yeah. He's not subtle. He says he'll basically flatten the whole place. Black Wind Mountain, Black Wind Cave.
No, turn it all into dust.
It's pure Sun Wukong. That immediate escalation. If he feels wrong, he goes straight to, well, destruction. So how does the monster handle this? Does he back down?
Not even slightly. It's actually kind of funny. He just laughs. A cold laugh.
And calls Wukong a rascal.
Right. And then flips the script entirely. Says, hey, wasn't it you causing trouble last night? Didn't you start that fire?
Wow. Okay. So, deflection.
Classic move. But then, interestingly, he sort of half admits it.
Oh.
He says, yeah, he took the robe, but it was for that celebration that you see. Like, it's a perfectly reasonable explanation.
A birthday party with stolen secret garments. Okay.
It shows a certain arrogance, or maybe just a completely different value system, is fascinating.
Definitely paints a picture of the monster's character.
Oh.
And then he asks Wukong who he is, right? Wants to know his deal.
Yeah. Essentially, all right, tough guy, who are you and what makes you think you can threaten me?
Which leads us into maybe the most famous monologue in the whole book.
It's certainly up there. Wukong's massive self-introduction, if you thought he was bold before.
Huh. Yeah, he starts off calling himself the monsters again, old granddaddy. It's establishing dominance.
Then the credentials. Disciple of Tang Sun Zhang, the master.
Torn brother of the emperor. The Sioux. Important connections.
And finally, the name. Surname Sun, given name Wukong, the pilgrim.
But that's just the appetizer, isn't it?
Oh, absolutely. What comes next is, well, it's his entire life story, all the highlights, his greatest hits.
It's like he's pulling out his celestial resume. You want to know who I am? Sit down. This might take a while.
Exactly. He goes all the way back. How he got powers, cultivated himself, escaped reincarnation.
Which is huge, right? Yeah. Escaping that cycle. Big deal in Buddhism and Taoism.
Massive. Then finding his master, learning the great heavenly immortal technique, achieving immortality.
Wandering around and getting into trouble, probably.
Well, he mentions getting his weapon, the golden hooped rod from the Dragon King. That's a key part of his legend.
And being the big boss demon back on Flower Fruit Mountain, King Monkey.
Leader of demons, yes. Then the whole saga with Heaven Begins. Getting called up there.
And the title, Peace On, Great Sage Equaling Heaven. He makes sure to mention it was highest rank.
He really clings to that title, doesn't he? It represents the peak of his rebellious glory.
And then the chaos he caused. Stealing the peaches of immortality.
Yes, yeah, stealing the Queen Mother's peaches is mentioned specifically. Part of wrecking the big heavenly banquet.
Fighting off heaven's armies. Battling Erlang Shen, another major figure.
Getting captured, but only with help from Laozi. Surviving execution attempts. Yeah. Surviving Laozi's own furnace.
Which actually made him stronger, right? Gave him the fiery eyes.
Exactly. The irony. Then more rebellion until the Buddha steps in.
And pins him under a mountain. Five Elements Mountain.
For 500 years. Until his current master, Tang Sun Zhang, came along.
And now he's on this quest to the west. Phew, what a story.
And he wraps it all up with the ultimate boast, I am the most famous demon of all time.
Be a mic drop. You'd think after that whole speech, the monster would be, I don't know, impressed. Maybe a little intimidated.
You would think. But the monster's response is just devastatingly dismissive.
What does he say again?
He just laughs again and calls him Be Ma Win.
Ah, right. The lowest job in the heavenly stables. Head keeper of the heavenly horses or something equally unimpressive.
Pretty much. It was the job they gave Wukong initially, and he found it incredibly insulting. Quit in a rage.
So the monster heard that entire epic tale of godlike power and rebellion.
And just picked out the one thing guaranteed to make Wukong absolutely furious. It's brilliant in a nasty sort of way.
It totally cuts through all the bravado. Hits him right where it hurts.
It tells you the monster is either unimpressed or maybe just very perceptive about Wukong's insecurities. He found the weak spot.
And Wukong's reaction. Predictable, I guess.
Oh, completely. Instant rage. All that composure, gone. He calls the monster a two. A thieving monster. Accuses him of daring to insult him.
And then it's back to threats. But physical this time.
Yep.
Ship, don't run. Taste my cudgel. The fight is on.
So the talking's over. The monster dodges the first swing.
And comes back with his own weapon. A long spear.
And that's basically where the snippet leaves us, right? The battle is just beginning.
Exactly. Poised for a major clash.
It's such a great exchange. You learn so much about both of them just from how they talk, how they posture.
Absolutely. Wukong's pride, his history, his surprisingly thin skin about certain things.
And the monster's arrogance, his sharp tongue, maybe his overconfidence.
Or underestimation of Wukong.
Yeah.
We see that Wukong's boasting isn't just hot air, he did all that stuff. But the monster focuses on the one failure.
The dialogue is key, isn't it? Wukong's long speech isn't just filler. It establishes who he is, why he's so powerful, and crucially, what his triggers are.
And the monster's insult shows he either knows the stories or is just incredibly good at provoking his opponents. It's psychological warfare, almost. Okay, so insults exchanged, then the fight starts.
Immediately. Golden hooped rod versus the black tasseled spear, the Ohe. And the text makes it clear they're evenly matched.
Really? Wukong met his match.
In this initial fight, yes. It's described almost poetically, this furious clash, back and forth, neither gaining an advantage. It establishes the Black Wind Demon as a serious threat.
Okay, so it's a stalemate for now. How does it break off?
The demon pulls a classic move. He says, hold on, gotta eat, and retreats back into the cave. Promises to fight later.
Just needs a snack break. Seriously.
Well, that's the excuse. He actually uses the time to get his feast ready and send out those invitations for the Buddha's robe assembly he was planning.
Ah, so it was just a tactic to regroup and plan his party. His priorities are interesting.
A bit skewed, yeah. But maybe smarter than just standing there trading blows endlessly. Show some cunning.
So Wukong stuck outside the cave again. What now?
He has to go back to the monastery, update Tang Sanzang and the poor monks.
Imagine their faces. Good news. I found it. Bad news. A really tough demon has it and is planning a party with it.
Pretty much. But you know, they're probably just relieved it's been located. At least there's hope. And Wukong, full of confidence, assures his master, don't worry, I'll get it back.
Even though he just thought the demon to a standstill and doesn't have a solid plan yet.
Exactly. But that's Wukong. He'll figure something out.
Yep.
Or stumble into the next step.
This is where the trickery comes in.
Yes. His second attempt is much more cunning. He spots a little demon running an errand.
Carrying an invitation.
Precisely. An invitation letter. And guess who it's addressed to? Elder Jinshi, the abbot.
Ah, the abbot.
Chaya from the Guanyin Monastery.
Wait, the monastery they just left, where the fire happened. That Elder Jinshi.
The very same. And the letter is signed, Kalo, attendant bear, reveals the demon's real form, a bear, and confirms the party plans.
So Elder Jinshi was in league with the demon. That adds a whole new layer.
It certainly suggests an alliance, which is worrying. But Wukong sees an opportunity here.
He intercepts the messenger.
Oh, more than intercepts.
Yeah.
Deals with the messenger demon permanently, let's say. And then transformation time.
Of course. Who does he turn into?
Elder Jinshi. A perfect disguise to get inside the cave.
Bold move. He just walks up to the cave disguised as the elder.
Yep. And they welcome him right in. Oh, Elder Jinshi, welcome. He gets a look around the inside.
Does he notice anything interesting?
He sees a couplet over a gate inside. Ne vilajiebe. Something about finding peace deep in the mountains, joy in a secluded cave. Ironic, given the owner.
Huh. Even demons like aspirational poetry, it seems. Does he see the cassock?
He tries. He subtly asks about it, but the black wind demon is cagey, doesn't show it to him, makes excuses, maybe not fully trusting Jinchi.
But the disguise won't hold up forever, will it?
Nope. A patrolling demon finds the body of the unfortunate messenger Wukong dealt with earlier.
Uh-oh.
Right. Puts two and two together, rushes back, tells the black wind demon, that's not Elder Jinchi, it's son Wukong. He's here to steal the robe back.
The jig is up, so another fight.
Immediately. The demon attacks, Wukong drops the disguise, reveals his true form, and round two begins, this time outside the cave again.
And how does this fight go? Still evenly matched.
Absolutely. The text describes another really fierce battle, just highlighting their equal power and skill. It goes on for ages.
Not long.
All the way until sunset. They just can't seem to beat each other. It's a proper deadlock.
So what happens when it gets dark?
The Black Wind Demon calls it quits again, says it's too late to fight, ducks back into his cave, and shuts the door.
Seriously. He just clocks off because it's evening.
Seems like it. Or maybe he just knows he can't win quickly and prefers the safety of his cave at night. Either way, Wukong is thwarted again.
Okay, this is getting difficult even for the great sage.
Mm.
What's his next move?
He finally realizes he might need backup. This demon is tougher than expected.
So he asks for help. That must hurt his pride a bit.
It probably does, but he knows when he's stuck. He decides to go to the top. He flies off to the South Sea to find Guanyin Bodhisattva.
Smart move. He explains the whole situation to her. The fire, the theft, the fights.
Everything. Lays it all out and asks for her help to get the cassock back from this stubborn bear demon.
And what's Guanyin's reaction?
Well, first, a little bit of a gentle scolding. She points out that his carelessness in showing off the cassock at her monastery kind of caused this whole mess.
Ouch. Fair point, though.
Yeah, a little reminder of his impulsiveness. But she's compassionate. Despite his mistake, she agrees to help him sort it out.
Okay, so Guanyin is on the case. What's the plan?
As they're flying towards Blackwind Mountain, they run into another character. Carrying two elixir pills. Ah. Turns out they're a birthday gift for the Black Wind Demon.
Let me guess. Wukong doesn't just say hello.
Huh. No. He jumps in and, well, deals with this Taoist, too. Quick work.
He just, attacks and kills a Taoist priest.
Mm. Just like that. The text doesn't shy away from the brutality. It's quite graphic.
It really is. And it definitely sets a certain tone, doesn't it?
It does. And Guanyin, the Bodhisattva of compassion, she's right there and she's, well, she's taken aback. Understandably.
Yeah, her reaction is immediate surprise. And she condemns it, right?
Right.
Like, why kill someone who hasn't actually done anything to you?
Exactly. It looks completely unprovoked, almost cruel.
But Wukong, he's never simple, is he? He immediately has a justification.
Always thinking. He tells Guanyin, look, this priest was a buddy of the Black Bear Spirit, the one who stole the robe in the first place.
Right. He says he saw them together on the fragrant grass slope talking about the bear's birthday party.
And specifically about a Buddha's robe assembly they were planning. So Wukong connects the dots incredibly fast.
He figures this priest was likely going to congratulate the bear early and would definitely be at this robe party thing.
It's classic Wukong, quick observation, deduction, and then, well, decisive if ruthless action. It's a preemptive strike based on that connection he made.
Guanyin is maybe a bit reluctant, but she seems to accept his reasoning.
Yeah, she does. But then there's a twist, isn't there?
Oh, yeah. The priest. He wasn't even human. Turns out he was a gray wolf spirit.
And they find this plate nearby with an inscription made by Ling Juze.
Wukong finds this pretty amusing, actually. Like, self-confessed culprit, deserved end, that sort of thing.
It kind of underlines his pragmatic, maybe slightly harsh view of justice. And it shows his initial assessment of the priest's allegiance was spot on, even if he didn't know the guy was a wolf.
So that initial violence, while jarring, wasn't just random. It was like step one in Wukong's bigger plan.
Exactly. But the robe is still missing. It's still in the bear's cave. So Wukong suggests a new approach, what he calls using a ruse.
Okay. Now we get into the real scheming.
This is where his cunning really shines. He looks at that inscribed plate they found, made by Ling Suzai, and sees an opportunity.
Okay. Oh.
He suggests they use the plate, maybe put a couple of immortal pills on it as bait, present it as a birthday gift from Ling Suzai.
Ah, so the inscription is the hook. They pretend to be this Ling Suzai character or associated with him.
Precisely. It leverages the bear's likely respect for a Taoist figure who could create such pills. It plays on the bear's expectations.
Clever. But Wukong takes it even further, doesn't he? His next suggestion is pretty wild.
It really is. He proposes that Guanyin the Bodhisattva herself should transform into this Taoist priest, Ling Suzi.
Okay, that's a serious disguise. And Wukong, what's his role?
His role is even more involved. He says he'll transform into one of the immortal pills, a slightly bigger one.
Wait, he's going to be eaten.
That's the plan. Guanyin, as Ling Suzi, offers the pills. The bear takes the larger one, Wukong.
Wow. Talk about infiltration. What's the point of that?
His idea is if the bear refuses to return the robe once Guanyin reveals herself, Wukong can act from the inside, threaten to tear out his guts, basically.
Good grief. That's extreme. But very Wukong.
It shows his absolute determination, no matter what it takes.
Now, Guanyin, she must have paused at this, surely. It's hardly conventional bodhisattva behavior.
Oh, absolutely. The text mentions her hesitation. I mean, turning into a Taoist priest, delivering your friend disguised as a pill to be swallowed by a demon. It's unorthodox, to say the least.
Understatement of the century.
But, you know, she sees the strategic value. She recognizes it might be the only way. So ultimately, she agrees, which says a lot about her flexibility, too.
Okay, so they commit to the plan. And the description of Guanyin's transformation is really quite poetic in the text.
It is beautiful. Crane cloak with immortal air, aged face like pine and cypress. It emphasizes her divine essence, even in disguise, her timelessness.
And Wukong becoming the pill.
Also very evocative. Described with alchemical terms, moving on the plate without fixed direction, round and bright, suggesting something potent and mysterious, not just a simple lump.
So Guanyin, disguised as Ling Suzi, carries this plate with the disguised Wukong towards the Black Bear's cave.
And the setting itself is described quite lushly. Cliffs, greenery, streams, wildlife. It sounds almost like a place fit for, well, spiritual practice.
Yeah, it's not just some dank demonic lair, is it?
No, and Guanyin actually notes this. She observes that the Black Bear, despite being a demon, seems to have some Taoist cultivation, some level of spiritual discipline.
That's interesting. Does that influence things later?
I think it does. It probably fuels her sense of compassion that maybe this isn't just a purely evil creature. There's something there to potentially work with.
Right. So they arrive at the cave. How's the reception?
Pretty good, actually. The bear's underlings recognize Ling Su immortal and welcome Guanyin warmly. The bear himself is polite, greets her properly.
The disguise works perfectly then.
Flawlessly.
Mm.
Guanyin offers the immortal pills as a birthday greeting. The exchange happens just as planned. She offers the bigger pill, Wukong, to the bear.
And the bear just pops it down.
Swallows it whole. Big mistake.
Uh-oh. What happens next?
And the bear just collapses in agony. Instantly, Guanyin drops the disguise, reveals her true, glorious bodhisattva form, and demands the robe back.
And Wukong, how does he get out?
Well, the text is rather blunt. It just says he already went out from the nostril.
Ah, out the nose. That's something.
A bit undignified, perhaps, but effective. And Guanyin doesn't waste any time. To control the bear, she slaps that golden hoop onto its head. The same kind Wukong wears, essentially.
With a headache band.
Exactly. She recites the mantra, and the bear drops his weapon, completely incapacitated.
And Wukong's reaction to seeing the bear suffer.
He finds it pretty funny, actually. Which, again, shows his mischievous, sometimes less compassionate side.
Classic Monkey King. So the bear's defeated. Guanyin asks him, basically, will you convert?
And the bear, in terrible pain, is like, yes, yes, anything, just make it stop. He begs for mercy.
Well, Wukong, being Wukong, probably wants to just finish him off right there.
He does. He suggests killing the bear. But Guanyin steps in. She says, no, I have a use for him.
So back to that idea of the bear having some potential.
Precisely. This is where her compassion and foresight really show. Instead of destruction, she opts for transformation. Her plan is to take the bear back to her island, Mount Putuo, and make him a guardian deity for the mountain.
Wow, from robe thief to guardian deity. That's quite a promotion.
It is. It's redemption through service. Wukong makes a funny comment about her immense compassion and wishes he had a spell that powerful.
He probably means the head clamping spell.
Very likely. So Guanyin formally accepts the bear's conversion, gives him a staff to carry, and tells Wukong, basically, okay, job done here. Get back to your master and keep traveling west.
And Wukong just heads off.
He retrieves the stolen robe first, offers to escort Guanyin, but she declines. Then, yes, he heads back to Tang San Zhang, and Guanyin returns to her island, Mount Putuo, with the black bear, now subdued and ready for his new role.
So just to quickly wrap up, Wukong's first attempts, very direct, very forceful, didn't quite work.
Right. He met his match initially, then came the clever deception, the transformation into Elder Jinchi, which also failed eventually.
Leading him to seek help, which brings in Guanyin and her plan.
Oh.
Oh, wow. The transformation into the Taoist Wukong as a pill.
That whole sequence was brilliant, using the demon's own expectations against him and culminating in Guanyin's merciful but firm subjugation with the golden hoop.
So what are the big takeaways here, would you say?
Well, you definitely see Wukong's strengths, his power, his determination, his cunning when he needs it, but also his weaknesses, his impulsiveness, his pride, the fact that brute force isn't always the answer.
And the importance of asking for help, maybe, even for the great sage.
Absolutely. And it highlights Guanyin's role perfectly, not just raw power, but wisdom, strategy, and ultimately compassion. That theme of transformation is huge, too, both literally with the disguises and metaphorically with the demon's potential redemption.
What does that tell us
about
good, evil, second chances? Can even a thieving, arrogant demon find a different path?
That seems to be the suggestion here. It adds a layer of complexity beyond just good guys beat bad guys. There's nuance, the possibility of change. It's one of the things that makes Journey to the West so rich.
Definitely. Far more than just a simple adventure story.
Yeah.
And like you said, this is just one episode.
Yeah.
So much more to explore in this amazing journey.